Jim Rosenhaus is the radio voice of the Indians, and he joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. Jim, thanks so much for doing this this morning.
You're welcome. Good morning, Jeff.
I've been lucky enough to cover Terry Francona with the Phillies as Red Sox manager. Of course, a little bit now. He really is. You know, you look at last night's game, and I think that win moved him into, I believe, a tie for seventh place with Sparky Anderson in the all-time postseason wins list. I know he has the best winning percentage of any manager, postseason winning percentage of any manager in baseball. Yet, Jim, you know, I guarantee you, if they go on to play the Cubs, it's going to be the genius Joe Maddon against Terry Francona.
Yeah, and that'll be interesting because they were rivals in the American League East when they used to see each other a bunch every season.
Yeah, there was a bit of an edge to those games, wasn't there?
Yeah, exactly. So if it does work out where the Indians move on and then the Cubs win in their series, that's going to be real interesting because, hey, there's no shortage of accolades that go Terry Francona's way. But you're right when you say genius because, you know, Joe Maddon's not shy about putting that out there, I think. And you know, he does some unconventional things. And that would be a very interesting matchup between two guys who are pretty darn good competitors.
Jim, a lot of interesting things in that game last night, a lot of potential turning points. But did Francona know how much of a roll of the dice it was sending Trevor Bauer out? I wondered about what the conversation must have been between Francona and his training and medical people before they made the decision to send him out because that, you know, it worked out. And again, Francona's getting a lot of accolades for the way he managed that game and managed his bullpen. But that could have been disastrous for them in this series, not just in terms of the game last night, but in terms of whatever Bauer can or cannot do, you know, could or couldn't do late in this series. What did they think they were getting with Trevor Bauer last night?
You know what? I think they fully were prepared for what happened. And, you know, you say, well, why would they send him out there? They're at the point where they don't have a choice. There's nothing left. You know, with the injuries to Carrasco and Salazar and Cody Anderson, who started the season in the rotation, struggled. So he's in the pen now. And that's what they're down to. So I think they just said, you know what? Let's roll him out there. See if the thing stays together and see what happens. And if it doesn't, they'll go from there. And that's what they did. And I think it goes just along the lines of what he has said throughout the postseason so far. You just try and win the game ahead of you. If you can get in front somehow, you go for it with your relievers that have been so good. So they took a shot. And then they'll worry about today, and it's going to be Kluber, and we'll see what happens there. But I mean, there's not much left, so they took a chance. And we had Mickey Callaway on our post-game show last night after the game, the pitching coach. And I'm not sure how this can happen, but they say if this series turns and goes to a Game 7, that Bauer would be available, which seems hard to believe after seeing the way he left the game.
It's hard to believe that if it didn't heal in those, you know, in the interim, that it would now heal, given that it certainly wasn't healed last night. But
although he did say,
I am not a doctor, though.
No, and I will say this. I will say this, Jim. After the game, Trevor did. I mean, he said that at least there was a scab forming now.
Well, that's thank you for
whatever,
sharing that.
Whatever that means.
Trevor Bauer's scab.
Whatever that means. At least there was a scab forming.
I think you guys are finding out that he usually has an answer for just about everything.
Yes, he does.
It may have you scratching your head. It may have you laughing if you're a Blue Jays fan, I want to swear at him because he's seemingly public enemy number one up here for a variety of reasons. And I can see him saying that after the game.
You've seen Andrew Miller since he has been with the Indians. Now, Jose Bautista made an interesting comment on Sunday. He said he thought that compared to the Miller the Jays saw last year when he was in the American League East, he thought he'd actually, as he said, he's been playing around with the slider a little bit and actually throws two sliders now. And Bautista just freely admitted, he said he threw me a pitch. I just hadn't seen that pitch before. He threw me a slider that just acted differently than any other slider I've seen than any other slider he's thrown me in the past. Have you noticed that? And what is it about Andrew Miller that explains, you know, the special nature of this guy, that he can basically go out, it appears, and in any situation and just lock things down?
Well, not having seen him all that much, because the Indians are not in the same division.
True.
Or were not as the Yankees or Orioles, I'm not sure about the perspective that Jose Bautista would have. I do know that his slider, I mean, obviously that was the big pitch when he was acquired and something that you look forward to seeing, but it seems like it's better than advertised, which is hard to do because he had ridiculous numbers with New York, but he's been even better since joining the Indians. So maybe there is a new wrinkle that he's showing on that slider and changing some speeds to it and some depth to it. But he's absolutely been, which is hard to do, again, I think better than advertised for the Indians. And maybe it's because of the way Terry Francona has used him. And that started right when they got him.
Mm-hmm.
He came in, I think, his second appearance in the sixth inning in a game that was close. And Terry Francona said, this is where the game's going to be won or lost. It's mm-hmm. We're not waiting until the ninth inning. This is where it's going to be won or lost. He went to Miller, and a lot of eyebrows were raised. You know, you got this guy to close games at the end and be a part of the back end of the pen. You're bringing him in the sixth. But what you see in this series is what he's been doing since the Indians got him. And I think maybe that's the biggest surprise of all for a lot of people who maybe were wondering, you know, how he would fit in with what the Indians already had at the back end of their pen.
Jim, why did he flip-flop Miller and Allen last night at the end of the game?
Strictly matchups. We asked Mickey Callaway that after the game, and they just felt the way the batting order was playing out for the Blue Jays, they felt it was better to have Cody Allen come on at that point than he did earlier, and he's been closing most of the games, but they just felt the matchups were better, and then down the line, if Allen could get through that part of the lineup, they liked the way Miller matched up later.
Because, you know, that's, again, another moment in the game where it looked, you know, like that might have been a bad, you know, that potentially things could, that would have been a decision that would have been questioned if that line drive from off Donaldson's bat, wasn't it? That, you know, hard hit ball out from Donaldson that could have, you know, again, changed the course of the game. I think people might have been asking why Miller wasn't in there, why it was Allen. And obviously, it's, you know, no, it's a luxury to have both guys, and, you know, both guys can close, obviously. But, you know, like everything last night, it worked out for them.
Yeah, and you know, it's been the case in the playoffs so far. Every move that Terry Francona has made has really worked out well. And again, they're not all going to. And you mentioned it. I mean, this is a game of, you know, line drives that are caught, line drives that fall in, and you know, fair ball, foul ball, all that kind of stuff. Donaldson's ball gets down, and maybe it's a different ball game. And we're talking about a 2-1 series here today.
In conversation with the Indians radio voice, Jim Rosenhaus, we don't get to see Francisco Lindor an awful lot. I'm going to say unfortunately. I mean, I've seen him on TV. I've watched him on TV a lot. You know, that play he made yesterday, it kind of gets lost in the shuffle a little bit. But, you know, for the first, maybe the second time in the series, the Jays actually put a hit and run on that seems to kind of work. And he makes that play at second base where he bobbles the ball, still manages, you know, is thinking quickly enough to kind of trap the ball, keep his foot in the bag. Again, you've seen this guy, you know, I presume you've seen probably all his games in the major leagues. How good can he be? Because, you know, I talked to a couple of people who have longtime scouts who say, hey, this guy is, you know, he's right up there with, he may not be Carlos Correa, but he's not that far away.
Well, I think defensively, he might be slightly ahead. The power that Correa has is uncommon, and mm-hmm. I think that's where he might have an edge. But I think if you ask the Astros if they would trade Correa for Lindor, they'd say no. And if you'd ask the Indians if they trade Lindor for Correa, they would say no to. I think both teams love what they have. And Lindor, he fits on this team, and the guy's 22, yet he has that uncommon, I mean, he plays like a veteran, I guess, is the best way to put it. And he brings a lot to the table. You've seen what he's done offensively, was an impact in games 1 and 2, and then a good defensive play last night. And he does make, he makes the routine plays as well as the spectacular plays. And that's what's so encouraging and what you like to see from your shortstop. So you know, sometimes they start throwing around the name of Omar Vizquel, who was so good for the Indians for so many years. And I think it'd be hard for Lindor to equal some of his exploits defensively, which sometimes he does. Maybe not on a consistent basis with the spectacular plays, but sometimes they're there. And what he's done offensively, hey, here's a kid, 22, who's hitting third in the lineup as all season because of the injury to Michael Brantley in just his first full season in the major leagues. That's a big responsibility for a shortstop at that age, and he's doing it and doing it well.
Jim, if the Blue Jays somehow managed to extend this series, and I know they're, you know, emotionally, I don't think a lot of people can wrap their heads around that here right now, but you know, logically, there's certainly a way it could happen. Who would start Game 6 for the Cleveland Indians?
Well, that would be Josh Tomlin.
It would be Tomlin.
Here's what you're looking at.
Okay,
and
so
again, for Blue Jays fans, Kluber's coming back on 3 days rest tonight, which he's never done.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see what happens there. And if they are able to squeak out a win, then you're looking at Ryan Merritt tomorrow, who would be making his second major league start. Young kid who spent most of the season at AAA. So, yeah, it could turn in a hurry. And that's why I think, you know, Terry Francona has always said it's not how quickly you get to the four wins. It's just be the first to get to four wins. Right. And that's how he's tried to play this series. And you mentioned pitching earlier, putting Bauer out there last night. That's all they have. So they're trying to line it up where by Kluber pitching tonight, then he could come back on 3 days rest and pitch game seven. Mm-hmm. If you waited till tomorrow night to go with Kluber, that most likely would take him out of the remainder of the series if it goes that far. So, yes, they're trying to nail it down tonight, the Indians are, but they're also looking ahead and trying to make sure that they are covered in case they have to win a game five or a game six or potentially a game seven.
Jim, Mike Napoli made the point after the game last night, and he was asked about the work of the bullpen and, you know, the credit that Terry Francona and the relievers were getting, and certainly justified. But he also made the point that, you know, a little bit of credit has to go to Roberto Perez for the way he has been behind the plate this series and the way he, you know, was able to sort of help work all those relievers into the game. I mean, he's a guy we don't hear a great deal of. We focus on Russ Martin in this city. He's a good defensive catcher. But you know what? Roberto Perez, for me, might be the revelation of this series.
And a great story, guys, because the number one catcher here is Yan Gomes.
Mm-hmm.
But Gomes got hurt in mid-July, and Roberto Perez actually got hurt at the end of April, broke a finger on his right hand, and was out until mid-July, and was actually had just started a rehab assignment at the AAA level. And then with Gomes getting hurt, they called him up right away. So if you look at his season batting average, it's not good because he came back too soon. He wasn't ready yet, but they needed him. So he came back, and what he has done to really work himself into that pitching staff and know what pitchers need to do and give them the confidence that they can throw a ball in the dirt and it's not going to get by. All those things that go into making a good defensive catcher, he has done. And it hasn't been easy because pitchers on this club, they have loved throwing to Yan Gomes for a couple of years now. So that's not easy when you're the backup for a while to come in and be that number one guy and gain that trust. He's done that. And I think you heard those words, what you're referring to from Mike Napoli. Andrew Miller has said it, how big a key he has been. Corey Kluber has said it. And that means everything in the world to Roberto Perez that those guys have faith in him.